This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, this is Enterprise Biz Bytes with me, Christine Wong, and
Arvind Yuvraj.
Earlier before the break, we discussed the My Assist MSME portal and how it is designed for SMEs and other businesses to essentially communicate, get advice, get information. And we'll be speaking shortly about how far can Pumule go with SMEs, as well as more information on the moratorium. If you want to get in touch with us, you can let us know what your thoughts are on any of these topics at Twitter or Instagram at BFM Radio or on WhatsApp 018-789-8899. So tell us a little bit more about the Pumule aid package.
Yeah, so economist Jeffrey Williams has warned that the government must ensure the survival of small and medium enterprises, or SMEs, because failure to do so will cause a domino effect on the economy. So in his article on Free Malaysia Today, Jeffrey said that SMEs were both buyers and sellers, buying supplies like groceries, ingredients, parts and components for resale, while also being suppliers to the larger companies. So if an SME falls, he says, it won't be able to buy from wholesale suppliers and it will leave larger companies with fewer options to source their parts. The bigger companies might also go overseas, and that's a permanent loss to local suppliers. He said this in response to a World Bank report on cash flow problems faced by SMEs. So according to this report that he mentioned, the median Malaysian company has only 2 months of cash flow left, which is a humbling statement, honestly. And while the average firm has about 4.9 months worth left. So generally, SMEs remain vulnerable despite government assistance because they rely heavily on revenues. So if they have no customers, they have no income. It's basically as simple as that, he says. SMEs also hold very small cash reserves. And I think this is important to say because a lot of people assume that when you run a business or a successful business that you have a lot in store, like in the bank, especially when in troubling times, you can just pull from that. But that's not the case because he says that they only hold no more than a few months. And Jeffrey says government initiatives like wage subsidies are sometimes too complicated to apply for or maybe too small. He also mentioned that e-commerce grants are too small and won't cover basic costs like rent. Instead, Jeffrey is calling for unconditional support grants to be given to SMEs to be spent as they choose based on the needs of their businesses. The Small and Medium Enterprises Association of Malaysia agreed that there would be a domino effect if SMEs collapsed. So basically what they're saying is smaller enterprises must be allowed to operate to ensure the sector survives the COVID-19 crisis. Otherwise, it would negate the aid the government or Putrajaya has handed out in the past under the different initiatives. Earlier this month, the association also warned that 50,000 more SMEs would be out of business if lockdown measures were not or were to be extended another 6 months or not loosened, and that about 100,000 companies have already ceased operations. And that's a huge number that I didn't expect to see. And I read for the first time when going through the article, and then I saw the number like 100,000, and I'm like, that is a massive, significant chunk that has been taken off the SME map,
yeah,
so to speak.
Yeah, considering the SME map fulfills 80% of the Malaysian economy at least.
The backbone, right? They keep calling it the backbone. Yeah, so that's a huge statement. But we wanted to get Jeffrey to sort of expand on this. So we have Jeffrey Williams on the line with us. And since we're talking about, you know, like aid for SMEs, we wanted to touch on Pumule and how that's working out for the business scene. So Jeffrey, with the current order of phases in the National Recovery Plan versus the amount allocated in Pumule, how long do you think the funds will last until a new aid package is necessary?
Well, the timing of the allocations is going to be very crucial, because if they're to be of any help to alleviate the suffering of people who've lost their jobs or whose business has closed, they're going to have to be introduced as quickly as possible. Now, the overall economic impact may be minimal, because although the package is worth 150 billion ringgit, which is around 11% of GDP, according to the finance minister, Tengku Zafrul, it may only add an additional 2% to GDP overall. So we're really more concerned about how quickly it will get to people. And it looks on face value that it won't get to people quickly enough. Also, since some of the payments are conditional on moving from one phase to another phase in terms of the progression of the virus, in particular the number of cases and the number of people in ICUs, and then the percentage of people who are vaccinated, it's highly uncertain that when we will move from one phase to another. And so the time issue has been left in limbo, unfortunately, in this package. And the program hasn't really clarified that either for businesses, for whom it's very important, but I think also in particular for potential recipients of the aid schemes who will be relying on this to be paid to them as quickly as possible.
Right. And also, Jeffrey, when it comes to withdrawals of EPF and moratoriums, how can SMEs decide which to opt into and which to decline without jeopardizing their future finances?
Well, for many EPF account holders, they may have no choice about the options for withdrawal or not, because within hours of the Prime Minister saying that there were 12.4 million people who were eligible for the 5,000 ringgit withdrawals, the Finance Minister revealed that 3.7 million of those, or about 30%, didn't have 5,000 ringgit left in their accounts. There's actually another group of people who are unaccounted for who will already have emptied their accounts under the iListari and iCNOR programs. So these guys actually won't really have very much option. Similarly, with the loan moratorium, we had to wait for clarification on that. But now we know that interest will be accumulated, but not compounded, and that there will be no penalty fees. But it's a tough call because the loan doesn't go away. For SMEs, for example, if they defer the loan repayments because they have no revenue, will they default in the future if the lockdown continues? And that's an issue for them, and it's an issue for their banks. So it's very difficult to say how they can decide what to do, because it depends very much on their individual circumstances. Many people really need the cash and they have no choice, and I sympathize with people who are in that position. But I'm an economist and I'm not a financial planner, so I can't really advise them on whether they should withdraw their EPF or take out the loan moratorium or not. It's really outside of my area of expertise. But what I can say in terms of government policy is that in relying so heavily on the EPF withdrawals and on the new loan moratorium, the government is basically saying to people, use your pensions now and don't think about tomorrow. They're also saying, don't pay your loans today, push them into the future, and don't think about tomorrow in terms of your loans either. So one really has to ask the question of whether they're trying to tell us something, whether they think that there is no tomorrow at all. And that's not really a good message. The government will need to come up with a replacement for the lost pensions pretty soon. And that's going to require some very difficult decisions, some very tough calls. And it's going to need some very good economic analysis from some very good economists.
We'll hear a little bit more from Jeffrey after the break. But just to touch upon the first two points that Jeffrey's made so far, you know, that is something that I think has been brought up a little bit on social media, the idea that most of the Pumuli aid package, or a lot of the major points of the Pumuli aid package, are reliant on essentially people's personal finances and not really government based funding, right?
And then, I mean, that also is, it's kind of reflective, going back to social media and what some people have said, what some analysts have said, is that we're at a point where aid is not straightforward anymore. It's not like there's aid coming in from the government, which is a good thing, and then people are able to accept it and use it, because we're at a point like 1.5 years into the pandemic, and now people are having to make choices. They're having to think what aid works, which doesn't work. Should they opt in? Should they not opt in? You know, how far can it go? And also people are desperate. So, you know, actions that are taken now could really, really have repercussions in the future, right? So, I don't know. It just paints a picture of, like, there is aid coming in, but at the same time, we are at a point where it's so complicated and it's so complex what works and what doesn't at this moment.
And I think also, you know, in comparison to previous aid packages, there was the idea, you know, with, let's say, the first MCO and when aid packages happened then, you know, the idea was this will be over soon, right?
Yes.
You know, this is a temporary holdover and we will be able to go back to our traditional ways of earning revenue shortly.
Mm-hmm.
This is no longer the case, right? So I think, you know, this the point that Jeffrey makes about they're not necessarily thinking about tomorrow or the future, and they're only focusing on mitigating the financial issues of right now, and maybe this might come back to, you know, bite people and companies later on. I think thinking about it in that sense, that might actually be the massive ripple effect that we might see in the future as well.
And that's so
terrifying.
Yeah. And that is so true, right? Because SMEs are resilient. We saw last year when the restrictions were loosened, we were doing well. We had good case numbers and stuff, you know, very low in the double digits. And a lot of companies bounced back and said that they were doing good business and they came back strong. It's only because of these sort of peaks and valleys, mm-hmm. we'd get to a certain point and then we'd go back into an MCO and then we'd get to, we'd come back up a bit and then crash. It's these the peaks and valleys are taking a toll on the SMEs. And it's quite clear, especially, just echoing what Jeffrey said, echoing what a lot of analysts said, it is taking a massive, massive toll on the entire industry.
Yeah, we're no longer sure when or if we will be able to bounce back.
Exactly. And how many more aid packages we might need.
Exactly. We'll hear more from Jeffrey Williams, economist at the Malaysia University of Science and Technology after the break. But for now, we are talking about what Pumule will be useful for SMEs, how it will be useful for SMEs, as well as more about the moratorium and other elements of this financial aid package. And if you want to get in touch with us or about any of the other topics that we'll be discussing or have discussed today, including the MyAssist MSME portal and cybersecurity top 10 spot for Malaysia, let us know your thoughts on Twitter or Instagram at BFM Radio or on WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Here is Guns N' Roses with Live and Let Die here on BFM 89.9.
Better Finance Management. BFM 89.9.
You're listening to BFM 89.9. This is Enterprise Biz Bytes with me, Christine Wong, and
Arvind Braj.
And earlier today, we were talking about the MyAssist MSME portal, and we're now currently discussing what Pumule will be doing for SMEs as well and how far it can go. But before we jump back into our conversation with Jeffrey Williams, here's a KLCI update at break.
So it is up by 0.49% at 1,540 points. Active stocks are Sabadynamic, Sarawak Consolidated and Sedania Innovator. The ringgit is at 4.15 against the US dollar, 3.11 against the Aussie dollar and 3.08 against the Sing dollar.
All right. Thank you very much for that, Arvind. So as I mentioned earlier, we have Jeffrey Williams on the line. He is an economist at the Malaysia University of Science and Technology. And we're asking him a couple of questions about the Pumule package and his thoughts on it. So, Jeffrey, some people have called the Pumule package comprehensive, while others have said it needs improvement. Are there justifications for both sides?
The new stimulus is presented as a comprehensive package because, as usual, there's a wide list of schemes covering different groups of people. And it appears as if they've made some attempt to try to provide something for everybody. But of course, this isn't the case. Actually, it's quite a limited package with only 10 billion ringgit of direct cash injections. And that's only about 6.7% of the total 150 billion. For example, the Department of Statistics has told us that around 1 million people have lost their jobs because of the lockdowns, either through direct unemployment or underemployment in the form of shorter working hours or taking lower pay and lower skilled jobs after losing their normal jobs. And they've been given only a 500 ringgit one-off payment, and that's going to be very disappointing for them. The assistance for people with disabilities is, of course, very welcome to everybody. It appears that it will only affect about 20,000 people, when in fact there are 560,000 people with disabilities registered with the Social Welfare Department. And so there may be very many people who are in need of help in that category who aren't going to get it. If we look at the students, for example, there's a 400 million ringgit loan relief package, but this is going to be spread out over 1.6 million students. And it's not generous, actually. If you just divide the two numbers together, you can see that it's only about 250 ringgit each. And since it's spread over several months, that works out only about 84 ringgit per month. And when we look at the general payments through the Bantuan Kas COVID-19 scheme, the new scheme for the general handouts, these are also very small and they're one-off handouts again, and they're spread over several months. So even those most in need will have to wait for a very long time, and they're only going to get very little assistance in the end. So my take on the program as a whole is that the people who designed it are really quite out of touch, actually. And it appears that they're forcing people to pay for the failure of the lockdown policy themselves. For example, if you look at the EPF withdrawals, including the $19.5 billion under Aylestari and around $58 billion, which has been approved under ICNAR, and now an additional $30 billion, which is estimated under the iCHITRA program. Add all that together, it's more than 107.5 billion ringgit. Now, if you compare that with the 87 billion ringgit in direct injections from all of the stimulus packages, including this new package, you can see that just from the EPF withdrawals by themselves, the people are paying more money in terms of stimulus than the government in terms of direct stimulus. And then if you add in the loan moratoriums and the insurance waiver, and then there are lots of soft loans, especially for the SMEs, which makes them even more debt laden, we can see that actually the burden of this problem is being placed on the people. So if you use this type of analysis, what you can see is that the rakyat are actually paying out of their own pockets for the lockdowns.
Mm-hmm. So we recently had Carmelo Felitto, the CEO of Center for Market Education, on the Morning Brief, and he said that we need to start treating COVID-19 as endemic, somewhat like Singapore, and start opening up the economy again. Do you share that approach?
What is the way forward? Well, the way forward must be to end the lockdown. The economic devastation is not caused by the virus, it's caused by the policy response. We can only expect the stimulus packages to be effective when the lockdown ends. You can't put one foot on the accelerator while you have the other foot on the brake at the same time. And to end the lockdown, we have to explore additional ways of handling the virus beyond the lockdown and vaccinate policy. This is especially true because we know the virus is not cured by the vaccine. Herd immunity will not be achieved, and new variants are always going to be a threat. The science tells us this clearly, and leading Malaysian and international experts are now vocal on these issues. In FMT, you've reported expert virologists making this point only today. Khairi Jamaluddin, the minister involved for the National Immunization Program, doesn't use the term herd immunity. Professor Adiba, who's Malaysia's representative of the World Health Organization, has also said we cannot expect herd immunity. And Dr. Jamila Mahmood, the Prime Minister's medical advisor, has also said that we must expect to live with the virus going forward. So we need to look for alternative policies. And these alternative policies must include non-medical management, such as that advocated by the World Health Organization. This includes various forms of proactive test, trace, and treat policies. This is a given and it's uncontroversial, but we must put more attention on this because it's being sidelined by vaccine obsession. We must also explore the use of prophylaxis and therapeutic treatment regimes in a grown-up way. This issue has become too controversial and polarized, and we must tone down the debate and discuss it rationally and dispassionately. And we must deal with that now urgently.
Right. And a final question for you, Jeffrey, as well. What would you add or subtract from the Pemulih package if you had the choice?
There are two aspects to the stimulus package. One is the macroeconomic impact, and the second is the social impact. So in terms of overall size, we don't see that the new stimulus package is going to inject the full 150 billion ringgit into the economy any more than we saw the previous packages injecting the full 380 billion ringgit that they were valued at in headline figures. In fact, the finance minister has already said that the net contribution of this package might uplift GDP by only about 2%, which is quite a marginal impact in macroeconomic terms. Now, although these are the headline figures, the actual stimulus is much lower because the money doesn't filter in down to the intended recipients. So I would have preferred our recommended option of direct cash transfers of 1,500 ringgit for each household in the B40 and M40 categories, and to allow them to spend that money as they choose, because in my view, this would also address the social problems because people know best for themselves how to spend their money on what they need and what their families need. And I worry about the depleted pensions and the savings, depleted savings as well. And I worry about the unpaid debts that people are building up because of the debt moratorium. So I would have preferred if the government had avoided that and dealt with the problem created by the lockdown policy directly with direct cash transfers. Overall, as long as we are still in lockdown, any economic stimulus isn't going to be fully effective because, as I mentioned before, you can't put your foot on the accelerator while your other foot is on the brake.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Jeffrey. That was Jeffrey Williams, economist at Malaysia University of Science and Technology. A lot of things to think about, lots of points. And also you can see this sort of like the momentum of the endemic talk sort of picking up, especially over the last couple of weeks where, you know, this might be something that we have to deal with long term. Mm-hmm. And how do we do that? You know, like what steps do we take to make sure that we are proactive and we are not just surviving, but thriving in spite of the virus?
Yeah, exactly. Well, of course, today we were discussing the MyAssist MSME portal. We just heard a little bit more about Pumule and also the moratorium from Jeffrey Williams, economist at the Malaysia University of Science and Technology. Coming up next, we'll be talking about how Malaysia has made the top 10 for our commitment to cybersecurity. Mm-hmm. But if you want to get in touch with us about any of those topics, let us know what you think on Twitter and Instagram at BFM Radio and also on WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Here is Tainted Love by Duffy on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.